The next presenter, Ken Leonhard.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you very much for bearing with me. My presentation is going to be quite a bit different from the others. It's nothing molecular about it, but bear with me. I'm Ken Leonhard with the Department of Tropical Plant and Soil Sciences at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. And the title of my presentation is Polyploidy as a Potential Erythrina Gall Wasp Management Strategy. Okay, here's flowers of Erythrina, Erythrina variegata on top. Well, actually, they're all Erythrina variegata. So. But it's, and here's importance of Erythrina in Hawaii. There's a couple of them that are very important, and there's others that are grown as ornamentals. Erythrina variegata tropic coral is a fascicate form, a very erect, very columnar plant. It was a selected mutation from a plant that was grown in New Caledonia back in the late 70s or early 80s. It was increased by the USDA Soil Conservation Service in Hawaii and released as a windbreak plant in 1985. It was a spectacular plant, very easy to propagate, very fast growing, no significant pest problems. And there were hundreds of thousands of these plants that were grown in Hawaii until a few years ago. There's another one, a native plant, Erythrina sandwichensis, considered a keystone species in the dry forests in Hawaii, and it was also very susceptible to this Erythrina gall wasp. This is a variegata on the top, not the fastigate form, but the typical broad dome form that's been grown for years in gardens for its spectacular flowers. There's a variegated form on the right. And then at the bottom is the tropic coral selection, the fastigate one that I mentioned that's extremely upright growing. Just showing you some characteristics of the flowers, the seeds, and the fruits. Okay, so here's the gall wasp. Got to Hawaii in 2005. Quadristicus erythrinae, and it was devastating. Here's on the left side the initial infestation. What happens is the female oviposits eggs into the tissues of leaves, petioles, and sometimes tender stems, and then they hatch, and the larvae feed inside the plant tissues and causes this massive galling that you see on the right side. Sorry about my inability to.
Maybe use the down arrow on the keyboard.
There you go. Okay, down arrow. Okay, initial infestation on variegata on the left, and within a year's time it's defoliated. They don't recover. When new foliage attempts to come out, the wasp is there, nails it, and these trees die. Here's the tropic coral variety again, widely grown as a windbreak, and on the right side it showing nearly total defoliation and eventual death. Another shot. This is the native one, sandwichensis, in the native habitat, and on the left side, early infestation, on the right side and below, these are lost. I don't know if there are any left, frankly. Oh, and this lower right just shows stumps. You can, throughout Hawaii, on all islands, you see these stumps. You have to take them down. Some of these trees can get big, 60, 70 feet, maybe taller, and they'll topple over because they're dead and there's no ability to recover, so they have to be taken down. Here again, I've shown this more than necessary perhaps, but I want to emphasize how important this plant was, and we don't really have an adequate substitute species for this as a windbreak plant. There they are after infestation, defoliation, and all of them have been taken down. I think this is on the island of Maui where there was a strip between the north shore and the south shore in the valley between two volcanoes where there were several miles of this on both sides, which provided windbreak protection for sugarcane, which had been grown there. Okay, a little bit about the thing, the wasp. It's from East Africa, first documented in 2003 in the Mascarene Islands in Taiwan, described in 2004 from specimens on Singapore, Mauritius, and other Indian Ocean islands. Got to Hawaii in April 2005, spread rapidly throughout all the islands, and then throughout other Pacific islands, and reached Florida in October 2006. So it has a fantastic ability to move around. Down here, Indian Ocean area, East Africa, Indian Ocean area is the habitat. A little bit about the biology. There's the image of the male and the female. They lay the egg. The female lays the eggs in the soft tissues of leaves and petioles, and the larvae grow in the tissue, and it's the plant's reaction to the growth of the larvae that causes this kind of massive galling. I mean, it's really terrible. Okay, having described the problem and how susceptible these two particular species are, Variegata and Sandwichensis, keep in mind that this came in 2005. Okay, let's stop there for a second. I'll tell you about another project that I have, because I'm not an entomologist and I don't deal with pest management. All this came about very serendipitously. My area of interest is variety development with ornamental plants, and in recent years, my interest has been to develop sterile forms of plants that are heavy seed producers, so that they won't be invasive, and to reduce litter problem. Erythrina variegata, not the fastigate form, but the typical broad dome form, is a heavy seed producer, and so that was a candidate plant for my program. And so in about 2003 or 4, before the gall wasp came, I treated some seedlings, or a postdoc that was working with me, treated some seedlings with colchicine in an attempt to create tetraploid forms that we would grow out and cross with diploids to create triploids with the expectation that they would be sterile. Okay, so we had this small population of polyploid seedlings. We didn't have any true tetraploids. We had four mixoploids and then another five or six control plants that we grew in this block. Here's the four mixoploid plants here, the one at upper number 46, 44, 42, and number 1. We determined that they are mixoploids through flow cytometry. So they had, let me just state first that number 46 was almost entirely, I don't want to use resistant, highly tolerant. You can see there were some puncture wounds and small little reactions to where eggs were ovipositive, but no development. And then these other two at the corners, 44 and number 2, also polyploids. Oh, okay, thank you. Also polyploids, mixoploids, that showed reasonably good tolerance. They didn't die. Everything else died. All the fastigate forms and all the native species Sandwichensis died, except in a few cases in a couple of botanic gardens and in a couple of resorts where imidacloprid injections were used, and that did prolong the life. And then the one at the bottom right, number 1, it's also a mixoploid, but it was totally destroyed by the gall wasp. So I thought, well, something's going on here, and I wasn't sure what it was. This just shows the techniques that we illustrates the flow cytometry, where we diced up the tissue, extracted the DNA, stained it, ran it through a flow cytometer, and then got some results that I'm going to show you. Okay, mixoploids. There are multiple, as you're well aware. I'll go through this quickly because you know it, I'm sure. We got the L1, L2, and L3 layers of a meristem. Okay, the L1 layer is where the guard cells are, usually one or two cell layers thick. L2 layer is where the gametes arise from, and then the L3 layer for cortex, vascular system, pith, etc. We prefer to have solid tetraploids, but if we have mixoploids, well, the important part to me was that the L2 layer be tetraploid, so that gamete production, so that we could get flowers and cross with standard diploids and create the triploid. So I thought my suspicion was that the reaction that since these plants, these four plants, these mixed diploid plants, were had one or two layer tetraploid layers and one or two diploid layers, that is probably the three plants that showed good tolerance were probably tetraploid and the on the epidermis, the L1 layer, and the one, the mixed diploid that showed no tolerance and was probably diploid on the epidermal layer. That was just my suspicion. So I thought, well, let's just measure the guard cells, and that'll give us a good indication of whether or not that's true. So here's an example of a on the right-hand side, a tetraploid guard cell about 25% larger than the diploid guard cell from the control plant shown on the left. These are just arbitrary units. Okay, so I'll show you the ploidy of the epidermal layers for each of these four plants. This is the one that had the highest resistance. I refer to it as excellent erythrina gall wasp tolerance. Okay, and here's their flow cytometry data. We streamed about, well, I don't know, over 10,000, 13,000 maybe, nuclei, and it fluoresced here at about the diploids at 13, and then we got 910 of those, 314 at about 25, approximately double. And then we had some octoploid cells. However, through guard cell measurements, the epidermal tissues layer was diploid. So I said, oh, well, I wasn't sure what's going on here. I expected that it was the epidermal layer that the wasp came in contact with, didn't like the texture or something about it, and didn't bother with the plant. Well, let's go on to the next one. So anyway, total polyploid nuclei are just under 33% of all the ones that were measured. Here's the next one, number 44, which had good tolerance, not as good as the number 46, but good tolerance. About 18% of its nuclei were polyploid, but it also had diploid epidermal cells. So it was the L2 and the L3 layers that were polyploid, or probably tetraploid. Again, I'm not sure what the reaction, what's going on between the gall wasp and the host plant. And then the other one that showed reasonable tolerance or good tolerance was number two. About 19% of the nuclei were polyploid, and then we have the one that showed no tolerance at all. It was as bad as the controls, and it had tetraploid epidermis. Okay, so I thought, well, what the heck is going on here? And now I feel like I'm in really trouble, big trouble, because I've already submitted the abstract, it's been accepted, and I don't have an explanation for my observations. So I thought, it's time to start learning about the biology of the gall wasp. I got a crash course from my friend, Dr. Mark Wright, who's been studying this since it arrived in Hawaii, and he's, never mind about his program, but anyway, I learned about the feeding behavior and where oviposition takes place, as it turns out, my suspicion that the epidermal tissues was the ones that would repel the gall wasp in the tetraploid state was totally that's irrelevant. It's where feeding takes place. So the epidermal tissues in all these plants, well, in three of the plants, was a diploid, but the internal tissues, either L2 or L3 or both layers, were the tetraploid level. So this is not one of my plants. This is just an illustration showing that the feeding of the wasp, gall wasp larvae takes place in the internal tissue and not the epidermis. So the epidermis is the eggs are laid in the either L2 or L3 layers, and that's also where feeding takes place. So I was wrong in my suspicion that the L1 layer, the epidermis, was critical here. It's irrelevant. It's the internal tissues. So back to these epidermal layers, all mixed diploids. So we know that there are some one or two tetraploid layers, one or two diploid layers. The most tolerant one, epidermal layer, diploid, so the other tissues are probably tetraploid, and the same is true for these two, and this one with the tetraploid layer, epidermal layer, must have had diploid internal tissues, very susceptible to feeding by gall wasp larvae. So anyway, that's what we think is going on. Summary, subepidermal tissues where gall wasp larvae feed are less attractive for feeding purposes in the polyploid state, than compared to the diploid state. And lastly, artificial induction of polyploid tissues may be a management strategy for the erythrinic gall wasp. Okay, thank you.